Hey, it's Freeform Friday. It's episode 232 of BulaNetwork.com. Today is July 25th, 2014, and I'm also going to include part two of the Big Bang podcast rebranding. We'll do it next. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. You can find today's show notes at Bula, BULANetwork.com/232. In fact, there's a cartoon that you're going to want to see. You're just going to want to see it. It's about the serious issues of the day. The serious issues of the day, well, they are indeed becoming less troublesome to me, or it could be that I'm just losing interest. It definitely could be the latter. Today is the last Friday of the month. That means it is Free Form Friday, because that's what happens every last Friday of the month. Well, actually, to be fair, many days are free form days for me, because that's just how I roll. Somebody sent me to a website earlier in the week that gives you this personality test. I'd never heard of it. It is called iPersonic, kind of like iPhone. iPersonic personality test. So, of course, you know, I promptly went over there and I took the test, a free test. I think I broke the test. Actually, I found some of the stuff, what it basically does, it gives you a list of statements, and you've only got two choices. So it's not one of those that takes a long, laborious time. In fact, I think there's only five. At the top, there's a group of statements, and at the bottom, there's a group of statements. And you've got to pick which group best describes you. And then you go to the next page and the next page. Anyway, five pages. So pretty short, pretty quick. I found the statements interesting. And I did notice myself. It's like so many others, you know, there's so many shades of gray. And most of those kinds of things are pretty binary. And I'm like, well, I'm kind of sort of like that, but no, then up here, I'm kind of sort of like that too. And yet you can only pick one. Well, I took it, and actually it may be a pretty good test. It is a pretty good sales ploy, because they have at the end of it, when you see the results of how they describe you, they have a tab for career. So basically you can find out what career might you be best suited for. A little late in the game for me, but that'll cost you $19. You can get the little short snippet, and it's nothing very specific. I'm assuming for $19 you get something more detailed, but I'm not sure. Not bad if you need a new career and you got $19. But if you're unemployed and you don't have $19, well, okay, maybe not. This is part two of the rebranding of the podcast as well. Just going to kind of kill a bunch of birds with one stone here. I am making progress. If you went back and listened to episode 231, I am making effort, and I'm making a little bit of progress. I'm putting forth more effort than progress probably at this point to rebrand the podcast here. I still have not settled on a name. Now, the topic or the niche, well, that's pretty well sealed, because as I said last time, I mainly want to make the podcast be a reflection of my work, of what I do. And so I want it to be congruent with the work. And so it really is about the stuff that I do every single day. And what I do every single day is higher human performance, is about diving in, doing the work, and sticking with it. And most everything that I talk about has some element of that in it. And the last time I talked about leadership, and I talked about the word moxie. Well, that's what I want the podcast to be about. And so now I need a great name, a super terrific name for the podcast. Is it Higher Human Performance? Is it Leadership Moxie? What is it? What should it be? What do you think it should be? I need your help. I want your help. I solicit your help. Just use the contact page at the website and send me your suggestions. And while you're at it, I'm still wrestling with, I know this, I want to continue with a weekly schedule. but I'm not certain about the length. I'm not certain about what days to release. And so I want you to think about that, and I want you to include that in your suggestions, if you don't mind. I would love to hear from you. How often should I release an episode? And I don't mean weekly, but should I produce a couple of times a week? Yeah, I don't see doing more than that. But if you want to help, I'm more than happy to listen to your suggestions. I don't know how long to make the episodes, and I've gotten some feedback about that, but none of it's terribly specific. I'm curious, should the episodes be a designated length and always be that length? I'm not terribly frustrated as a podcast listener if I listen to an episode and it's an hour, and then the next week I listen to an episode and it's 40 minutes or it's 30 minutes. I'm usually, the podcast that I want to listen to, I'm usually more frustrated by one that comes out that is 15 minutes and I wish it would have gone longer. The ones that are too long, I bail out on those, so it doesn't matter how long it would be. Some people have said, I think Dave Jackson has said, and he read it in a book, and I don't remember the book where he read it, but it's true. You know, content can't be too boring. It can't be too long, but it can be too boring. Yeah, okay. I may not agree with that. I think it can be too boring, but I also think it can be too long as well. Attention spans being what they are. I don't believe, and it's pretty interesting to me because I read a couple of blog posts today. And if you are a reader, if you're not a reader, you should be, of Quick Sprout, quicksprout.com. This is Neil Patel's blog. Neil Patel's co-founder of Crazy Egg and Hello Bar and Kissmetrics. And there can be some crazy long blog posts there. I mean, these are not little things, little ditties that you're going to read in a matter of 2 minutes. These are the kind that just, they'll wear you out in just scrolling down. If you're looking on a desktop or a phone, you just keep scrolling and you keep scrolling and you keep scrolling. Sometimes that drives me a little bit crazy. It's like, man, this, you know, if you were to take this web page and you were to lay it out on the floor, it would be 11 feet long. So these are really comprehensive, and he does a lot of infographics. He does do something that I'm not a real fan of, because I would love to put some of this stuff on my Kindle or my Kindle app so I could read it away from my desktop or away from whatever, you know, just on the fly. And he will do such long posts, and they may be 3 or 4 pages. And there's no way to get it on a single page. There's no way to convert it to a PDF. There's no way to get it to your Kindle. So Neil, if you're listening, he's not. He's a brilliant guy, by the way. I mean, this is a guy whose reputation was to help the likes of Amazon and NBC grow their revenue because of his genius with web traffic and all that stuff. But the blog is quicksprout.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. Long form kind of stuff. Well, there are a number of people online that do long form kind of content. So fooey on the people that say, well, it's got to be 2 minutes. If it's not 2 minutes, then you lose people. I don't think there's one size that fits all. And if you're a podcaster or any kind of a content producer, I'll echo the same sentiments that most everybody who is touting, especially the podcast community, you know, the typical podcast consultants, those kind of guys they're all saying the same thing, in that they're advising people, it's your podcast, you can do what you want. Are there best practices? Sure. Are there some things that are probably a little smarter and wiser than other things? Sure. Do you have to do it that way? No, you don't. You can do it any way you want to. How long are the podcasts that you most listen to? How long are they? How long would you like them to be? Now, people, I get tickled sometimes because I think we can overanalyze stuff. People will talk about how long a commute is, as though a single podcast episode needs to mirror the length of somebody's one-way commute. I mean, is that the case? Is that really the case? I mean, is it the, I'm thinking about the times that I go to the gym and I'm listening to podcasts, and that's when I mostly listen. And is it ideal to have a podcast that the minute I get to the gym, I can hit play, and as soon as I'm, you know, while I'm stretching and getting ready to leave, it ends and I go, great. Because you know what happens to me? I just leave my earbuds in my ears as I'm leaving the gym and get into the car, and I'm now listening to it on the way home. And if I get home and it still hasn't ended, I'm wearing it in the house. I don't know. I think we overanalyze, and we tend to think, well, if the average commute is 22 minutes, then your podcast should be 22 minutes long. Okay, well, what about the people? I know people that are commuting an hour and a half a day one way. I mean, 22 minutes, you're not even, man, they've barely got up to highway speed by the time your podcast ends. I don't think any of that really matters because of the portability of this. We can take it anywhere we want to, and it's not like we have to consume it in one setting. Do you have blog posts, or do you have PDFs, or do you have, well, I know you have books that you don't consume in a single setting. Do you think it's necessary that a podcast be consumable in a single setting? And if it's not, I wonder what's the attrition rate on that? If somebody does not, if they're not able to listen to it from beginning to end in a single setting, do they bail and never go back and finish it? I don't know how you would track something like that, but I'd be curious to know how many people bail out at the end of a podcast, not because they didn't like it, but just because it just wasn't convenient in that single setting when they clicked play. Does that make sense? Anyway, I need your suggestions. I need whatever suggestions you've got. First and foremost, I need a terrific, super terrific name. I need any suggestions you have about the day of the week that would be best for a release, and how long should the episodes be? A few people, okay, very few people have suggested that I also incorporate some video stuff, namely my word of the day stuff. I haven't done this in a long, long time. I'll put a link in the show notes to one of those episodes. I'll try to pick one of the more popular ones for sure. It's not like they got a bunch of views. And I don't remember if I would do this on just video or if I would also do it on audio. I'm thinking I just did it on video. What I would do is, and it was very random, I would just think of a word, or I'd look around on the bookshelves and a word would leap out to me, and whatever came to mind, I'd riff on it. And these typically weren't very long. These were typically, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, probably max. A single word. In fact, I know, I'm looking here. The word that I'm going to link to in the show notes is the word chase. C-H-A-S-E, chase. Some people have said, yeah, we should resurrect that, bring that back. Word of the day. I love words, so I'm tempted to do that. I'd be tempted to do that. But anything that you want to give me in a suggestion, I will happily read it, study it, consider it. Just use the contact page over the website, Bula, BULANetwork.com. What's on my mind? You know, this week, like most weeks, leadership is on my mind. It's always on my mind because it's always the topic at hand. And I don't know. I don't even know how to begin to articulate this. I've been somewhat frustrated lately at people who don't seem to understand, not the burden of leadership, because you don't expect anybody to. There's a reason why the phrase "it's lonely at the top" exists, is because it is. But it's rather amazing to me, people that have a low degree of sympathy for all the things that a leader must consider. It's very easy, I think, for all of us to just get blinders on and we think about our little area of the world. And in a workplace or an organization, that's also true. You know, people have got their head down and they're doing their work and they may or may not be considering somebody else and whatever pressures there may be internally or externally, it's of no consequence to them unless it affects them. And meanwhile, a leader, a person in a position of authority, is considering a lot of things. Most leaders, their world is controlled by a lot of moving parts. And they aren't able to just isolate on one particular area and do something in isolation. There's this, you know, homogenizing that goes on in all of their work. And the great leaders take that into account. They consider those things. They consider a decision here will impact something over there. And yet I'm always amazed at highly intelligent, very educated, very smart people who fail to recognize that, who just see every problem in isolation and every solution in isolation. And it's rather remarkable to me. I don't have any hard, fast answers for it other than I'm working on it. And I have likened it to a number of clients through the years. You know those little diagrams, it looks just like a bunch of dots on a page, and your challenge is to see the word or see the phrase or see the face or see the picture of something, and you've got to stare at it. And sometimes you got to stare at it for a good long while before you see it. But here's the rub. The minute you see it, you can't not see it, he says, using a double negative. Right? So you're looking at this black and white. It just looks like a bunch of really close dots on a page, and you can't see and you can't see. And all of a sudden, well, there's a popular one that's out there now. And I think the words in the picture are, I can't sleep. Have you seen that one? That one's been pretty popular and it's been spread around. Well, it's not clear, but when you stare at it, eventually you're able to see on the top line, I can't, and on the bottom line, sleep. I can't sleep. The minute you see it, you're not able to unsee it. Now, every time you look at it, it just jumps out at you. I'm trying to figure out a way to do that for people that are working under a leader and they don't always have an appreciation for the decisions that the leader makes, because they just think, in some cases, they think the decision's willy-nilly. In some cases, they don't agree with the decision. In other cases, they don't necessarily care. It's just because it doesn't impact them. And sometimes they care because it does impact them, and they don't get it. They don't understand it. If they could see it, something tells me they wouldn't be able to unsee it. And so the challenge for me in the work is there something I can do? Is there something that I can construct to help them see what the leader sees, at least see enough of it so that they recognize it? Because here's what I've learned. Until people do see it, and sometimes it's just organically it's happened, right? They see it. They kind of understand what the leader is trying to do. And even if a leader articulates it, and even if they articulate it well and clearly, in so many times, you know, the people shrug. They really don't get it. They really don't understand it, no matter how hard we try to show them. And I guess it's a little bit like a math problem. I mean, the minute people see it, okay, then they get it. What I have found, and I have seen this in my peer group of people who do executive coaching and that kind of stuff, people spend so much time in really trying to persuade people. And I'm all about persuasion and influence. Don't get me wrong. But if I'm going to try to persuade you that there is an image in this photograph that appears to be just dots, and I'm just going to work like crazy to persuade you that's true, that's true, that's true. That's a tough row to hoe as opposed to helping you just see the words. Because the minute you see the words, I don't have to spend a lot of time persuading you. You can, it's there. You see it. It's obvious. And what I mean are leaders can have pressure. Let's take somebody who's a senior manager in a corporation. Let's take somebody who's maybe a divisional president, somebody that's maybe an executive vice president, a senior vice president. They have got pressure from above. They've got a CEO, they got a president, and you could even take that person. And that CEO and that president, they got a chairman, they got a board. It may or may not be a publicly held company, but they're accountable to somebody above them, and they're accountable to people that are below them, and they're accountable to people that are alongside them. And then there's the external. There are the customers, and there are the suppliers, and there are the financial partners, and there are all these groups of people that are exerting pressure on the leader. And that's true in every conceivable situation. I mean, things are just not so cut and dried that, okay, there's a leader in the corner office, and then he's got his direct reports, and that's that. No, there's a lot of other influences going on here. And so some of the decisions that get made, well, I could give you countless examples. I'll make one up. So a leader thinks about something and puts forth some edict. It could be anything. You know, this is a project and we're going to take this project on. And let's say he's got 6 direct reports. And 4 of those direct reports, they don't care. But the other 2, for whatever reason, they care, and they care a lot, and they're not happy about it. And they're making sure everybody knows they're not happy about it. And they just don't understand why that decision got made. They don't agree with it. It's stupid. This is idiotic. That happens in organizations all the time. People second guessing the decision of a leader. Well, over time, the leader can sit with these 6 people, including the 2 naysayers, and tell them, here's what I've done. Here's why I did it. And he can peel back the curtain as much as he can or as much as he feels comfortable. And the 2 naysayers may still be wanting to throw rocks because they just don't understand that it's not all about them and it's not all about their department, that there are other issues at stake. It could be some external issue that has put pressure on the leader, and he's taken that into advisement. It could be pressure from a CEO above that he really can't talk about, he really can't divulge, but it's a pressure upon him to make a certain decision. And so he weighs all of these things and makes a decision, and now he's got two naysayers about it. My challenge is, how can I help those 2 naysayers be more agreeable? Now, some have argued, well, Randy, you can't, because what you're dealing is you're dealing with some personalities. You're dealing with some people that just, they're not going to be pleased no matter what. That may be true. And I have certainly seen that, and it's possible. But my question is, in that virtual photograph that says, I can't sleep, I'm sure there are people that stare at that for a long, long time and they're still not able to see it. And there are other people who can just glance at it and it jumps out at them. Now, that's a visual thing. And I'm sure there's some reason for that. I'm sure there's some cognitive thing going on there that is vastly beyond my understanding and my skill set. But I rather think that the same thing could apply to these kinds of situations. Because don't you know that the 2 of the 6 direct reports who were the naysayers, that if they could have some better sense of the bigger picture, they might at least have some appreciation, and they might not be so wrapped up and so intense in their naysaying. And I could be wrong. And I just am not real fond of spending a lot of time persuading people, especially direct reports. I rather believe that direct reports, listen, the decision was made. You need to salute it and move on. You know, go on about your business. I do know some personality and some personality types that just want to continue to be wrapped up in something, even if the decision didn't affect them directly. That's another amazing thing, isn't it? And through all the years that I have encountered this, I still don't get it. And I see it very regularly. Somebody gets worked up about a decision and the decision does not impact them in any way. And it's like, why? Why is this, of all the things that you get worked up about, why are you going to get worked up about this? But it's just the psychology of the workplace. These are the real world issues that I face day in, day out, in trying to help organizations move forward. You know, sometimes there's little doubt. Sometimes organizations just realize that maybe these two out of the six, and these two, they're naysayers, and they're always naysayers. And here's what happens. And this is the sad reality of it. As time moves on, the exec VP may look at these two and say, it's just easier to replace them than it is to try to help them see it. And in so many times, he's right. He's just right. And so a big part of my job in working not only with a corporate leader, but also with the direct reports, is to try to help those people with their career. Because in the ideal situation, the exec VP has got six direct reports and they're all coming along very nicely. No, are they all going to be eventually, are they going to be VP material? Probably not, but it's going to be a feather in his cap if more of them than not could be, or at least could be considered. As I sit down with subordinates and direct reports, I will commonly tell them it's not a matter of if that's the track that you're on, or if even that's the track that you want to be on, or if that opportunity will ever present itself. But don't you want to at least do your part so that that's an option? Maybe. You know, give yourself every chance to succeed as best you can. Put yourself in the best position possible, because if they do that, they not only help themselves, but they help their team and they help their boss. They help their organization. And that's how everybody wins and everybody gets better. But some people are just, you know, they're far too selfish and they can't see the forest for the trees. And some can't see the trees for the bark. And off we go. These are the challenges that I face. These are the challenges that many, many, many companies face. I'll answer a question or two here, because I'm always asked about the work. I went into it a little bit in the last episode. The work really has, man, the work has morphed so much through the years. What I would describe Boodle Network as initially is Boodle Network was really a consultancy. And the distinction between a consultancy and a coaching kind of a thing is the consultancy is really in there doing the work. Not alone, but really part of the work. And for the most part, these would be long-term kind of things. These would be six-month to year-long things, and usually they would be targeting a specific business issue. It could be sales and marketing. It could be pricing. It could be management and setting up the org chart. It could be the systems and the processes and the actual getting the work done. It could be in documenting the work that needs to be done. It could be in helping rewrite quote forms, you know, how we communicate to our prospects and to our clients and our customers, all kinds of things, very specific things where I not only was troubleshooting the problems, but coming up with solutions and then helping execute those solutions. To me, that's consultancy. Well, that defined my consultancy, helping do the work, helping architect the work. Coaching, on the other hand, is a completely different animal, made up mostly of a lot of listening, a lot of observing, a lot of paying attention, a lot of trying to climb behind the eyes and really see what's going on, and a lot of exploration and really trying to help the client explore the possibilities of better ways to go about something, better ways to address certain things, better ways to organize the work even. Not so much a do this, don't do that, but as I said, I think in the last episode, a lot of advice giving for sure. But a lot of advice giving after a lot of listening, a lot of paying attention, and a lot of observation, and a lot of communication and conversation. It's a dialogue-based kind of a thing. I find myself more and more doing the latter than the former, although in many cases the former nearly always involves the latter. The consultancy almost always involves a degree, an element of coaching. Coaching, on the other hand, does not necessarily involve any degree of consultancy or really diving in, what I would say, getting your hands dirty. Increasingly, I'm doing less of that, and I'm doing more of the latter. And that's fine. It suits me fine. I think I've gone on record, and if I haven't, I will today, in saying the one thing that I really don't love is, at the end of the day, I get in the car and I go home, and I'm not really part of the organization. I'm still really an outsider. And that's how it needs to be. There has to be a professional distance for an effective coach, I think, to be effective as a coach. You're not part of the group, but you're part of the group to the degree that you need to be to get some things done and to help them. I get really vested in people. In every assessment test that I've ever taken, I am off the charts in empathy. That has made me an effective salesperson. That has made me a reasonably effective copywriter, because my empathy factor is crazy, insane high. I get really vested in the clients. I get really vested in the people. I don't just get vested in the primary client, but I get vested in the secondary clients. And the secondary clients typically are the direct reports. And I want to do everything I can to help these people propel their career forward. And as a result, it can be tough. When a stint comes to the end, that can be difficult, because I've spent 6 months, maybe a year, in some cases more, with a group of people, getting to know people and climbing behind their eyes. And, you know, one minute you're working really hard to help this group of people, and the next minute you're not. Now you've moved on. I find that really challenging, because I put so much of myself into it and into these people. But hey, it's the nature of the beast. Have I been tempted to do something different? I've absolutely been tempted to do something different. Somebody, in fact, asked me just a couple of weeks ago about that. And I said, hey, listen, I could be very tempted to be part of an organization. I do miss being part of an organization. It's the loneliness of being a solopreneur, in that at the end of the day, you do get in your car and you leave, and you know that there are these people and there are these missions that they're on, and you're only part of it really at arm's length. And there's just something that's discouraging about that over time. So, hey, true confession, that's just how it is. I spent my life being the guy that really ran other people's businesses. And so I typically was the guy in the corner office and enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy, it wasn't a matter of lording it over people. It was just a matter of knowing that you were in charge of the outcome and you bore the responsibility. And I loved it. I loved it. There anything that I would do different. I'm at a different place in life now, for sure. Not only in age, but just in kind of desire of what I want to do. And now an awful lot of it is not only to do good work myself, but to pass on. Now it's really about trying to help other people and trying to prevent them from having to, you know, trudge through the trenches that maybe I had to trudge through. And if I can help somebody and I can teach somebody and show some people a few things, and then that's great and wonderful. The majority of my clients, the last kind of a question that I seem to be asked quite frequently is, you know, age, and all over the board, but I would say that most probably are in their 40s and 50s and 60s. I don't know if that's just a fact of my own age. It could be. I don't know if it's the fact of the kind of people that are attracted to me. I can't really answer that. I'm not the guy who is here teaching the online lifestyle. And I know that's popular, and I have had some people suggest that I kind of morph into that. I'm not going to, because that's not who I am. Could I go all in such an endeavor as that and maybe make some headway? Maybe, but you know, I've spent my life in what I call the real world. And it's not that the online world is not the real world, but so much of it isn't. the TMZ, the Entertainment Tonight, the internet, the social media, I mean, all of it, it isn't 100% accurate any more than the news media is. There is this reality, and then there is this public kind of a false reality. I'm a guy who's really in the real world. I'm in the real world dealing with real businesses and real organizations that, for the most part, those famous internet names that you know, these people have never heard of them. I can tell you that almost 100% of my clients, I could sit down and I could say, have you ever heard of Pat Flynn? And they would say, no. Who is that? They could say the same thing about Michael Hyatt and any number of people that those of us that spend some time in the online space and some time in social media, these are names that we all know. 100% of the people that I deal with don't know their names and don't have a clue who they are and frankly don't care. I mean, these are people that are busy building businesses. These are people that are generating hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and they're working. I think we get our head down and we get our head so far into the internet and we just think that this is the stage, and it's a huge stage, don't get me wrong, and it's a huge platform. But there are a lot of people doing a lot of stuff, and it's technology stuff, it's non-technology stuff. Some of it is just dry as dust and boring as all get out to many of us. Other stuff is very exciting, very appealing, very cutting edge, new age technology. But there are people that they're just too busy. They're too busy doing stuff to be playing around and paying attention like maybe you do or maybe I do to all this other stuff. I'm really bent. I'm really getting more and more bent toward that because I'm going to end this kind of, well, I'm going to end it the way I kind of began it with this whole higher human performance thing. Higher human performance really is for me about diving in, doing the work and sticking with it. And I talked about the last time and go back to episode, what would it be? 231. And at the bottom of the post is a 12-second video of my granddaughter. And she hasn't been on skates very long. Her birthday was back in April. My son bought her a pair of hockey roller blade skates, online skates. And within 24 hours or so, she wasn't holding on. And now she's insanely good. The kid's three. If a three-year-old can dive in and do the work and stick with it, it shows you what can be accomplished. And I'll say that for you. I'll say that for me. I'll say that for anybody. The internet affords us some great, tremendous, hugely powerful tools and opportunities, but it ain't all online. Don't think that there's not success being had in the physical world, in the offline world, because there are. I mean, just this week I was rewatching an old episode of Dirty Jobs, and of course, all episodes are old because it's off the air now, unfortunately, but you know, the host, you know, Mike Rowe he's going over the side of a skyscraper to help clean the windows in Hawaii. Here's a window cleaning guy who started out cleaning windows for this particular restaurant on a Monday so he could eat, on this restaurant on a Tuesday so he could eat, and this other restaurant on a Wednesday so he could eat. And now he's got about 50 employees. He's got about 25 people that work on skyscrapers, and he's got about 300 buildings in Hawaii that are high rises that they do the work. There is nothing online about that. I mean, this is strap yourself in, get your squeegee and your sponge out, and go do the work. So I don't know what I want you to do with that other than just know that higher human performance is about that kind of stuff. Diving in, doing the work, sticking with it. I'm going to dive in and do the work, and I am going to stick with it. And I hope that you'll help me. I hope you'll go to the contact page and help me out with that. My name is Randy Cantrell. I'm coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. This is the Yellow Studio. Okay, brace yourself, kids, because August is almost here. And before you know it, the kids are going to be back in school. Oh, I can hear moms all over America. They're cheering wildly. Yes. Trees are going to be turning. Hopefully, they're going to be turning a color other than brown, because here in North Central Texas, we are in about year four of a drought. And, well, we need rain very, very badly. The weather will hopefully be cooler as well. In fact, this next week, the first week of, the last week of July, we're expecting a cool front, the second one of the summer to come through. And that's always a good thing. So, hey, coming to you here at the very end, just hoping that you will go to the website and hit that contact tab at the top of the page at BULANetwork.com and send me an email to help me with this rebranding effort. I would greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it. I will probably produce an episode next week. Then I'm probably going to go dormant for a short period of time. I'm going to have neck surgery, kids. So far, I think right now it's scheduled for the week of August the 4th. I've got a slight bulging disc. I don't know. I think it's kind of pinching things off at what they call C5, C6. I could be off. Maybe it's C4, C5. At any rate, it's in my lower neck. They go through the front. It's kind of eerie, you know, when you think about it. Now, I've known two or three people. This is the same surgery that Peyton Manning had. They kind of go through off one side to your of your neck, and they go through the front. Anyway, most of the people that I know who've had this done said they instant relief if they had any kind of pain. The only real pain that I've got is kind of a sharp pain in my left shoulder blade. So hopefully that will subside. But anyway, Lord willing, I'm going to get that taken care of that week. And so I'm not sure what I'm going to be doing. I probably won't be doing a whole lot that week, to tell you the truth. But that's week after next. Next week, you can look for another episode. In the meantime, give it some thought. These things that I need help with for rebranding the podcast, and use the contact form over at the website. I'd greatly appreciate it. See you soon.